just sit with each other in silence for a moment, just to reflect on giving some space to the truth of our stories, our suffering, our pain, our struggles. This is a moment of suffering. This is part of life. Everyone feels this in some fashion at some time. May we be kind to ourselves and each other. You just reflect for a second on that very brief experience on, as I've shared, acknowledging the parts of us that really just want to have someone listen and say, I hear you, I care, your pain is okay with me. So we need to tell our story, not to ourselves again and again, but to someone who can give us the space to just be with it so we can get out of our story, so we can free ourselves from that. And just hold it with compassion and see it clearly and calmly. Serenity is not freedom from the storm, it's peace amidst a storm. And we bring mindfulness and compassion and equanimity. Things are as they are, not as I wish them to be. People are as they are, not as I wish them to be. I am as I am, not as I wish me to be. Can I start from that place? Without judgment, with patience, with acceptance, can I give myself space to be? From there, compassionate action. What's wise? What's compassionate in this situation? How can I be with it? How can I face the truth? So these quotes are sort of definitions of healing, simple ones. You may find your own. I just want to share them with you. You have them on the sheets that are in the handouts. Healing is not a matter of setting the molecules straight. It's not paint by the numbers. It's supporting the person seeking healing to have an experience of wholeness, just the way they are. And when we practice mindfulness, we're accepting our thoughts, our emotions, our feelings, our pains, our wounds. We're opening our heart and accepting ourselves just as we are. In that sense, we're touching our wholeness. And in that sense, we're healing. Just the way we are, even with our wounds. This is Stephen Levine, another teacher of mine, who wrote some many wonderful books. Great beginning meditation book, A Gradual Awakening. Gradual Awakening. He said, if there is a single definition of healing, it is to touch with mercy and awareness those pains from which we have withdrawn in judgment and dismay. If there's a single definition of healing, it is to touch with mercy and awareness those pains from which we have withdrawn in judgment and dismay. So part of the teaching today has been to create a space where you could see those pains and learn, I have choices and resources to relate to them in the very practice of mindfulness, in seeing clearly the truth and in welcoming it with a compassionate heart. And see the healing in that and listening to ourselves and each other, because when we can say it to someone else, the healing is self-healing, but we need it to be acknowledged. And the third is the phrase that I've been sharing with you all day, the truth liberates, not your effort to be free. That's Krishnamurti, the Indian philosopher. When the mind is still, tranquil, not seeking any answer or solution, neither resisting nor avoiding, it is only then that there can be a regeneration. Because then the mind is capable of perceiving what is true And it is the truth that liberates, not your effort to be free. First teachings of the Buddha, we don't free ourselves from suffering by trying to get rid of our suffering, by seeing the truth of it with a compassionate heart. So this is from my namesake, Mark Epstein. The key to the transformational potential of bare attention is what he's calling it. We might call it give it space. We might call it see it with new eyes. We might call it pain to rain, right? Paths are many, truth is one. Lies in the deceptively simple injunction to separate out one's reaction from the core events themselves, i.e., get out of your story. It's not wrong, but staying caught in it doesn't necessarily free you from it. With bare attention, we move from this automatic identification with our fear or frustration to a vantage point from which fear or frustration is attended to with the same dispassionate interest as anything else. So that's the meditation teacher saying, can you be with your struggle? Like, can you see the truth of what you're stuck in? Instead of pulling me or anyone in to get me out of here. I'm not judging that. We all want that. We're suffering. But as I shared with you, it's either more, but I know you. We all have the resources, as scary as it is, as painful as it is, to go to the heart of it, and we've already survived it when we were children or this or whatever. We had no other resources, no support. You're all found your way to a meditation center. So the resource is inside of yourself, your own wisdom, your own compassion, to face your stuff. Gandhi had to face his, Martin Luther King had to face his, Mandela had to face his, Maury had to face his. You got to face yours, I got to face mine. I don't want mine, you don't want yours, but this is what we got. this is how it works. At least that's what I've learned listening to people for all these years. He goes on to say, there is enormous freedom to be gained from such a shift, seeing it with new eyes. Such shifts create a psychic space in which the meditator learns to feel and contain his or her difficult emotions without trying to change them. I'll add, fix them, cure them, or get rid of them. Pain to rain. It is just this space that is the tenth of an inch of difference between heaven and earth, the hairline crack between clarity and suffering. Was Maury suffering? Was he happy that he had a disease and was dying of amyotrophic lung? Probably not, but I don't know that he was suffering because of the nature of how he used his suffering to enlighten others. And that's the choice that we have. It's the only choice that's available to us. So Pema Chodron says, to be fully alive, fully human, and completely awake is to be continually thrown out of the nest. To live fully is to be always in no man's land. That's her book, The Wisdom of No Experience. To experience each moment as completely new and fresh. To live is to be willing to die over and over again. I took a week long many years ago, in the 80s, with Stephen Levine. He wrote a book called A Year to Live. He worked a lot with people with death and dying. And he started the workshop, similar to what happened with Swami Vishnu when I took that. Why are you here? And he didn't ask that. He said, how many people here are dying? And only four people who had come with a diagnosis of a terminal illness raised their hand. And he's asked the question again, how many people here are dying? And then a few more, and then it took a couple of times, and he realized this is the nature of the beast, right? And what he found, scientifically and otherwise, is that people who face their death, that's why he wrote the book, and say, you know what, I'm going to die, let me just live, they end up, if they have a disease, a diagnosis, they end up living a lot longer than the people who are trying to, whatever. And the challenge isn't don't try to cure yourself, but it's how do you go about it? It's not what you do, it's the attitude and energy with which you do it, with compassion, and love and acceptance, not the fighting and the hating and the getting. Because This is not a seminar and webinar to doctors, because them I have to prove scientifically that their heart disease cancer is connected to their wounded child. And I show them all the studies. They still may not do that, but that's there. You can trust me that underneath is a part of us that feels scared and helpless and needs love. And all of our kicking and screaming is to protect ourselves and to stay safe. So she goes on to say, if we learn to open our hearts, anyone, including the people who drive us crazy, can be our teacher. My best teacher is my brother-in-law. It took me a long time to make him my best teacher. Before he was my best teacher, he was, you know, somebody who drove me crazy. My best people I learned the most from for the patients who were most difficult. The patient goes, cure me, fix me. You will appreciate this story. A patient came years ago. I give lectures all the time, and follows me to my car. I have everything wrong with me. I see psychiatrists, I have asthma, I have allergies, I have digestive problems. Can you fix me? Can you help me? I've tried everything. I give him my card. I go, I don't know. Let's see, because I don't want to reinforce what he has. I can tell you that story. Long story short, he finally comes in, and he's right. He's got all of this stuff, and he's got bags of supplements and vitamins, and like, I don't know what he thinks I'm going to do for him, but he's coming. So I tell him to do the same thing the other doctors tell him to do. You should change your diet. You should deal with stress. Tell me your story. Tell me about your childhood abuse. Learn to meditate. Take your supplements, and you'll get cured. Well, there's only one problem. He didn't do it. He wouldn't listen to me. And he listened to all the other doctors who told him the same thing. It wasn't like, you know, they weren't wrong, but there was something else he wanted and needed. Even the therapist was, you know, trying to fix. And I was studying at the time with John Wellwood for many years with him and a number of psychologists and psychiatrists. And I said, you know what? And I joined this group because they wanted to learn Buddhism and I wanted to learn more psychology and psychotherapy. This was in the 80s. And they could not understand, the psychiatrist, present company excluded, but it was really hard for them to understand, give it space, let it be. Like, it was an antithesis, or antithetical to, I got to figure it out and know what to do, because that hadn't been part of their training up until that point. And so I'm with this young man, and I see in my schedule, I remember, and I said to my secretary, and I said, what am I going to do with him today? Like, he's been coming, and I tried everything. I gave him a diet, I gave him supplements, and everything I'm telling him is the right thing. I mean, I'm not wrong, but he doesn't listen, and he doesn't want to cooperate. He doesn't, not participating. It's pretty much like What About Bob, baby steps, okay? He was a What About Bob. Exactly, he wanted, you got it. So I could have said, but I got nobody to refer to him. He's been everywhere. So this is a true story. And I said, what can I do? And I said, you know what? Why not practice what you're learning? Just love them. Give them space. It wasn't easy. Like, stop trying to fix them. Stop trying to help them do this and that. And I wasn't very, you know, I'm not Mr. White Coat prescriber anyway. But still, I am a doctor, and I know things can help people to take action. So I have to, it's my job to tell them, but they don't always listen. This is why I don't bother telling people anything. I'd rather have them listen to themselves. As soon as I started just letting him be and leaving him alone, all he needed is what you guys did with each other. He just needed somebody to say, I hear you. It's okay. His psyche needed somebody to say, you're okay just the way you are. I'm not going to fix you and cure you, because in some way we're telling ourselves that. Right? In our self-improvement, we're saying, I'm not good enough. In order for me to be okay, I got to... I'm not anti-Oprah, but I'm using an example. I got to do what Oprah does, then I'll be okay. In the sense of following that as the answer for us. We should follow that, but not because we need to do it in order to be okay. We have to start that we're okay just the way we are, the different energy. And when I started to do that, now it's very hard because the patient's never going to come to you and say, just be with me, because they say fix me, but then they don't want to give you, allow you the chance to be with them in a way that will allow that to happen. But that person is now an acupuncturist somewhere in Arizona. He became a naturopathic doctor. And if you ask me, like, what did you do? I didn't. I loved him. I said, I can't fix you anymore. There's nothing I could tell. Now, he did have to change his diet, and he did have to eat healthy, and he did tell me his story of childhood abuse, and we did work on healing, and we did all of that, and he learned meditation. But what really shifted it was the nature of the relationship that I let him be. I gave him space and let him be just as he was, just as he needed to be. You know, that's gestalt therapy too. You know, the process of change is not trying to be what you're not, but to be who you are. I'm going to emphasize again, that's what meditation is. It's being with your truth. And that's very, very powerful medicine. So two more things, and then we'll take some sharing and end with a compassion. This is more Pema Chodron. If we learn to open our hearts, anyone, including the people who drive us crazy, can be our teacher. So back to pain as a teacher. When we protect ourselves so we don't feel pain or so we won't feel pain, that protection becomes like armor that imprisons the softness of the heart. So see, I know that you have a place inside of you that has the wisdom and compassion to deal with what you're suffering from, if you will allow yourself to go inside and look at it and find it and be with it, which is what the practice is. We're here to get to know and study ourselves. The path, the way to do that, our main vehicle is going to be meditation and some sense of general wakefulness. See the truth. Bodhicitta is our heart. In the end of pain to rain, it's our true nature, bodhicitta. Our wounded, softened heart. Right down there in the thick of things, we discover that love that will not die. We cover it up, we kick, we scream, we run, we avoid, but underneath that is the essence of who we are. That's why we're all in pain, because that's all we want to be, is who we are. And if you're Christian, that's Christ consciousness, from my perspective of what that is. This love is bodhicitta. It is gentle and warm. It is clear and sharp. It is open and spacious. The awakened heart of bodhicitta is the basic goodness of all beings. That's the end. And I'm saying, as a doctor and therapist and teacher, that's the medicine. That's medicine. That heals us. That's the healing of the wound. So I'd be remiss not ending with a letter to give you one more tool for you. It's the 5 A's of love. This is from a book by David Riccio, who wrote a book How to Be an Adult in Relationships. But I think it's about how to be in relationship with yourself. So these are the 5 A's. You have the R's and the C's and the pain to rain and all the handouts. And these are the 5 A's. Think of a child, think of a little girl and boy. What do they want? They want attention. See me. That's what you did with each other. Pay attention. They want acceptance. Well, I don't want to tell you that. I got to fix this. You accept them just the way they are. That's what meditation is. They want attention. You allow them. You just give them space. You let them be. That's that psychic space that I'm speaking about. You appreciate them. Say anything in closing. I want to guide you in a meditation to practice those 5 A's. You have all the handouts. I have a website. If you want to be on my email list, put it there or send me an email. I want you to look up Healing the Wounded Child by Thich Nhat Hanh. I love that they're bringing healing of our wounds into mindfulness practice, into Buddhist practice, because that's the power that it has. Yes, sir.
When you say see the truth and it heals, do you mean the truth as in whatever we say, whatever, I'm trying to understand what is the truth. The truth is that whatever is the story,
No, the truth is without a story. It's like, you know, things are as they are. No, so it's to get underneath the story that we're telling about it. Okay, so as Gavin Harrison was saying, I was an infant and I was abused and I was mistreated as a child and I'm carrying all of the shame. That's a story. That's a truth. But the deeper truth is, what's that experience? Can I be with the truth of that experience, not the story about it, and see what I'm calling shame, what I'm calling pain? And can I be with that truth? That's what Krishnamurti is talking about, liberates us. Not the effort to be free from it, but to see it in a different way, to relate to the story differently, in the way that Mark Epstein said, with some psychic space. So that's the challenge, that's the art, that's the paradox. In the heart of the pain is the healing. Okay. And yet, when we're in the pain, we want to get out of it. So the challenge is, how can I be with it? That's why that's, if you look at my sheets, the one that has living questions with my face on it, I don't think I had a beard then. It has those questions with definitions of healing. And these things are to contemplate. That's why I call them living questions. It's like, you have to come to that truth. That's a wonderful question. And that's a reflection that you have to come to on what's your truth. You follow? And because we tell ourselves so many different stories. You know, Byron Katie? Yeah. She has something called The Works. And her whole question is it true or not? What are we telling? You know, I have patients all the time. I had a patient last week, a young man. He lets me tell the story. I'm not going to go into his whole story. But you know, we're working on being deserving and shame. And he's quite, quote unquote, codependent. He's a loving, wonderful guy, wonderful with his wife. But he does all the chores around the house, has a full-time job, does the laundry, does the shopping. And certain of those things, he's really tired of it, but he's afraid to say anything because he doesn't want to upset the apple cart. And he feels guilty, and he feels ashamed, and he's carrying all of that stuff. And he said, you know, she wouldn't want to be with me if I didn't do the laundry. And the. Now, I don't think that's necessarily true about his wife, but that's what he's carrying. That. He's telling himself that story. That story is based on him having been horribly bullied as a child in school, which sets up a whole cycle of shame and identity that lives. We have a chance when we meditate that stuff will come up. The story lives in our minds and our hearts. The place it comes up is meditation, which is why I'm teaching this way, so that when it comes up, you welcome it. It's the essence of why the practice is here. So you have the tools and the resources to be mindful and compassionate in the face of the suffering. Okay? Thank you. Yes?
One book, I mean, you mentioned Mark Epstein and read from him, but one book I would really recommend to anybody who's dealing with inner trauma is a book he wrote called The Trauma of Everyday Life.
Yes.
And it's I think he wrote it 7 or 8 years ago, but it's a fantastic book about dealing with, you know, one's own deepest traumas. And again, he affirms we're all carrying trauma from our deepest childhood to life experience to just the trauma of, you know, the annoyances of being stuck in traffic.
Right.
But it goes so deep into one's, you know, deepest inner realm.
Right.
But it's a fantastic book because, again, he's a psychiatrist plus his practice as a Buddhist grew up together.
Right.
And his capacity to wed these two things together is always amazing to me.
Yeah.
But I felt in the end what he was saying was, you know, as people who go to therapy or into spiritual traditions, we're all trying to fix ourselves, and of course we do. But again, what I heard him say in this book is acceptance.
Yeah.
You know, instead of trying to fix ourselves, that we can accept this is part of who we are. You know, I am traumatized from childhood, from this event, and that is part of me now.
That's the medicine.
And yeah, and it's very liberating because fixing oneself is an uphill battle and probably one that we probably can't fully obtain.
Or fixing others.
Yeah, but I'm more concerned by myself at the moment. But not that I'm not concerned about others, but I'm more...
Well, we cured you of that today.
Well, I'm very concerned for others, but I'm, you know, I'm talking about my own inner journey to...
Part of me is concerned for others in a non-codependent way.
Yeah, well, I love others, but I'm actually not a fixer. But I highly recommend this book, especially to people who probably came today, the trauma of everyday life.
Yeah. And what the reality is, what I have found, why I shared with you about sounds true, everybody is coming to the same truth. Hmm. This is not Paul Epstein has discovered the universe. I've learned everything I learned from everybody else, mostly from my patients who've had the courage to do that. So there isn't anybody that's going to not come to the realization, oh, we have to be with the truth and accept it and bring compassion to it. And that's the medicine wherever. Just to reflect for a second, I came about it as a holistic doctor where I saw that all of the illnesses and wounds that people came through that were living in their bodies and their anxieties and depressions were also connected to that trauma that they had never really accessed or seen was there. This is, you know, more the mind-body. Did someone else did you want to say something? And then thank you. Say your name again so we...
Adelia.
Okay, thank you.
So I recently read Narayan Helen Levinson's book, The Magnanimous...
She's a great teacher up at Massachusetts.
Cambridge.
Cambridge, and also teaches a lot at IMS.
And she was here.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was here, and I couldn't go to that, so I bought the book. And it's called The Magnanimous Heart, and it's... the style is somewhat... It's like Jon Kabat-Zinn's Wherever You Go, There You Are. It's more of a reflective kind of style, and I've read it twice quickly already, and have underlined it all over the place and put quotes from it in my phone. But she says in there that acceptance isn't always readily available. Mm-hmm. It's a process, and you also have to give yourself time. Like, you know, something traumatic can happen, and you're like, it takes a while to accept. I'm still like, this should never have happened this way, and I'm not happy with this at all. So there's also that, you know, giving yourself time to get to that.
Well, it's not that acceptance is the thing. It's an intention. Right. And how you become accepting is noticing that I don't accept, as opposed to trying to accept. So exactly what you're saying.
And I guess the same would be true of forgiveness.
Same thing. It's a process. It's a process. So if I can mention about a book, because I'm talking about pain my entire career, I wrote a little book on meditation called Happiness Through Meditation. And it's a little book with a lot of meditations and guided meditation and healing. It's no big deal. It's out of print now, so if you try to get it on Amazon or whatever, it'll cost you about $300. That's what happens when books are out of print and you have one. But it's available for 99 cents on those digital things. And it's a really nice little book. I just always forget to mention that. But find books, whether it's Epstein's book or Narasimha's book or Jack Kornfield's book or Pema Chodron's book. And as you study and read and practice, you will see, as I've done today, you're going to say the same thing 100 different ways. Because we're all, you know, it is what it is, and we all come to that. And my understanding, which is exciting, is the psychiatrists are understanding it, the medical doctors are understanding it, the psychologists are understanding it, the naturopaths are understanding it, the clergy people are understanding it, the nurses are understanding it. We are whole human beings with minds, body, spirit. They're not separate. We can't divide your heart into your body. The therapist can't just treat your relationship and not know what you're eating for breakfast. The nutritionist can't just teach you what you eat for breakfast and not know what's happening in your relationships and the whole nine yards. And I'm hoping this supports you in your mindfulness practice, that you use, in a positive sense of that, the resources and the choices available to you of your mindfulness and compassion as the main therapy, treatment, medicine you have available to you to face your things. You wanted to say something, and then you. I'm sorry for saying you, but I didn't remember everybody's name.
Is it up to
I'm
me?
Sorry. Yeah. No, you go ahead.
Okay, my name's Laura. Anyway, I was interested, it struck a chord with me that you said you meditated for quite a long time and you were very peaceful, but you didn't really get to your deeper issues. And I'm just wondering, I'm sort of thinking maybe I have the same thing because I have had a long time practice and it has changed me internally, you know, without a doubt. But I don't come up with these issues during meditation. I just do like the breathing or the, you know, meditating.
That's fine. It's not that.
Is there some way you can get into what your issues are?
No, I wasn't saying that the opposite of that is to try to get into your issues when you're meditating. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying when I was meditating, the way I was meditating early in my process, those things weren't arising somehow. So subconsciously, I was avoiding it. I didn't go there to avoid it. And I don't go to meditate now, okay, now feel your shame and feel your pain. That's not, but it's more when it comes up, I now have a tool to be with it. And it wasn't coming up before. Not because I wasn't calling it up, but because I wasn't aware that I didn't have the intention as much to be open to my full experience. So there's no
like
universal. Your process is your process. Mine is mine. Your meditation teacher or yourself or, you know, has to reflect on what that might be about in that regard. Because sometimes we come to practice in order to, we don't do it consciously. You know, I came to yoga practice not to face my pain. I was in pain, but I wanted it, so it became a path that, oh, I felt good, I relaxed, it helped me, but it took a while before it opened me to use it more fully to be with that because I wasn't ready in that way, okay? So I don't want you to read any response that's related to you in that, okay? Does that make sense?
Sort of. I was just wondering how one does be more open to. I mean, we all have issues.
You practice seven intentions and have compassion, and you sit on the pillow, and when it comes up, be with it with pain and rain.
Okay.
I mean, literally, as opposed to, all right, come on, I want you to be here. I want to heal you with my. That's not what I'm suggesting. But when it comes, you have the ability to open to it. I have to stop. I apologize. I don't apologize, but I have to go. I have a place to. Did you have one more?
Yes.
It's okay. I do have to stop. So let me just make a one final. I do want to end with a moment of mindfulness before she makes her announcements. Thank you for coming and listening and participating and being willing to explore and open to this. I am hoping and have offered this in intention that it's useful to you and that you practice some of the resources and choices that you have available to you. I am going to be here again in April. And the next thing is sort of a continuation. It's more they wanted me to talk about neuroplasticity and understanding the neuroscience of how mindfulness changes the brain. But it's not going to be how to change your brain so you can get the results that you want. Okay, so if that's where you're going to come, you'll be disappointed. It's going to be just understanding that if you come and be mindful, you'll learn and appreciate how your brain is changing and creating new neural pathways and deconditioning you from your neurotic patterns. And Carolyn Mace, if you've heard of her, she wrote a wonderful book called Why People Don't Heal. It took me a long time to recognize that, how attached and addicted we can become to our own wounds. It's kind of like a sadomasochistic thing that we're not even aware of, you know. And so there's a whole host of different parts of us that we need to open to. Mindfulness is but one tool. It's not the cure-all. What I'm sharing is not the answer for everybody or anything. Take what you want that was helpful and leave the rest. You have resources. You have my handouts. If you have need support, you have my email address. Yeah. On some of the literature, you should have it. And you just do my name, Dr. Paul Epstein. I have a website. I've written a lot of articles. And I did teach something similar to this about 10 years ago that's on Dharma Seed tape library on working with pain and difficulties, which is similar, but it was 10 years ago. Well, I welcome whatever you experienced here that was helpful or not, because my intention is to be as good a teacher as I can to meet individually, collectively your needs. So whatever commentary you want to offer from me as a teacher, I welcome it. And also in terms of your experience, especially with touching some of these wounds, if something comes up for you and you don't have anybody and you need some support on that level, I'm not wanting you to be my clients or any of that stuff, but just in the continuation of this, if you do have that kind of struggle on this and you need to contact someone, I guess I'm the guy. because I don't want to leave you hanging in that way. And people don't usually abuse that privilege, but I wanted to make that available to you. Okay? So before we sit, two last pieces. The back of my book, you'll get why what I wrote. I had to pick out, well, what's the most important message that you want to have that you're writing in your little book? And it says, as we are present in our lives and conscious of our power to choose how to be, we cultivate greater happiness in everyday life. So that's what I hope to have given you, that consciousness, that awareness that you have the power to choose how to be with whatever is happening. And that's what the freedom and the happiness is, not getting rid of what's happening, however difficult at times, but learning from it and opening to it and being at peace with it as it is. And then, are people familiar with children's letters to God?
No.
Nobody?
Heard of the title, but I don't.
Fantastic. Then I'm glad that I can read this to you before we close. So I'm going to read you a couple of these. And this is for the inner child in all of you. These are really cute. You can go online too, but it's a great book. And you have a whole sheet there on how to be resilient. We've emphasized mostly the awareness to be with your feelings, but humor is part of that, optimism part of that, social support is part of it. So read that handout. Look at the handout. There's still a lot of material in there for you. I'll probably be covering that on April 16th. Okay. So this is what some of the children say to God. How did you know you were God? Charlene asked that. I read the Bible. What does begat mean? Nobody will tell me. Love, Allison. Now here's a couple of good ones. And these are real letters. Dear God, instead of letting people die and having to make new ones, why don't you just keep the ones you got now? Yeah. Dear God, who draws the lines around the countries? Dear God, I like the Lord's Prayer best of all. Did you have to write it a lot, or did you get it right the first time? I have to write everything I ever write over again. Okay. God, it's okay that you made different religions, but don't you get mixed up sometimes? Arnold wrote that to God. Just a couple more. Let me see this one. Hold it. When you made the first man, did he work as good as he does now? That was Tom. And then, dear God, thank you for the baby brother, but what I prayed for was a puppy. There you go. You see, so that reminds me of the G word, which is grateful. Dear God, I wish that there was no such thing as sin. I wish that there was no such thing as war. Isn't that nice? Dear God, my brother told me about being born, but it doesn't sound right. I know that happened to me. I said, that's how it happens? That doesn't sound right. That can't be how it happens. Dear God, I don't ever feel alone since I found out about you. Nora wrote that. Dear God, I do not think anybody could be a better God. Well, I just want you to know, but I'm not just saying that because you're a God, Charles. Sucking up. And then this is a nice one, gratitude. Dear God, I didn't think orange went with purple until I saw the sunset you made on Tuesday. That was cool, Eugene. And the concluding one, and then close your eyes for a second because we're going to end with a moment of compassion. This is from Frank. Dear God, I am doing the best I can. So take a breath. Find a little girl or boy in you. If you pray to God, tell him you're doing the best you can. And open your heart to yourself. This is a moment of challenge, of struggle, when we face our pain. It's also a moment of joy. It's in our suffering that we find liberation. It's in our sadness that we find joy. It's in facing our fear that we become courageous. So there are gifts in all of these difficulties. And we have the choices and resources to face them. So breathe in and out for yourself. This is a moment of challenge and joy. This is all part of life. That's all it is. It's hard sometimes, it's painful, it's scary, it's not fair, but it is. How can I be with it? With as much love and compassion as I can. And as I wish this for myself, and hopefully we see here today, we are all the same. Everybody's scared. Everybody has pains. Everybody has wounds. Everybody has struggles. How can I be with mine? With wisdom and compassion. And the last word of the seven intentions, gratitude and generosity. Our practice is to share and give to others. The Dalai Lama says, if you want to be happy, practice compassion. You want other people to be happy? Practice compassion. Opening the heart. It's what connects us. It doesn't take away the truth. It helps us open to the truth with a heart that can soothe the pain of it. So spread that out, the compassion, the love, because we are all in it together. So may all beings be happy, may all beings be peaceful, and may all beings be free from suffering. And thank you all, and we'll see you. When we see you. It was really a pleasure. Thanks for participating. And you have choices and resources. Go forth into the world. And thanks a lot. Thank you, New York Insight.
Thank you. And if you are able and...
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.